Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Joining me today, like quite often these days, is my girlfriend Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And what book are we going to be reading today?
We're not reading, but reviewing.
Talking about. What book have we read?
All the Birds in the Sky by Charlie Jane Anders.
Charlie Jane Anders, who I've never read before. However, this book kept coming up. I saw it a few times last year. It was published like January 2016, it said there, didn't it, on the Goodreads?
Yeah.
And so I saw it last year floating around and people said, oh, I read this book and read that book, whatever. It came up on some of these best of the year science fiction books, wasn't it?
Especially in the Goodreads one. And so I thought, oh, I'll check it out.
Oh, was it on the Goodreads Best of 2016?
Yeah, okay. Science fiction.
Yeah, it was on that list,
yes,
wasn't it?
It was on that list.
And but I saw it in, there was, I can't remember what website it was, but it said, okay, what we've done, we're not just having our top 10 books of the year or top 5 books of the year. What we've done is we've gone around lots of different websites, or like 15 different websites, and seen what they think. And this was the most mentioned book. So this was on more people's top 5 books of the year or top books of the year lists of these different things. So I looked on there on Amazon and I saw it was on sale on as an ebook for, it was like $2 or €1.50 or something like that. So I was like, oh, I'll just give it a go. And that was maybe what, 2 weeks ago? Well, it's before my previous work trip, so about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so I started reading it and I immediately found it very funny. It's because I didn't know anything about the book except it's something to do with mixing fantasy and science fiction, and I just started reading it, and then I thought it was very funny. However, Juliana had some other opinions. So, before Juliana goes on her epic rant about what she didn't like about this book, I want to say that I actually quite enjoyed this book. It was definitely, the first half was better than the second half. It tells the story of the friendship and relationship slash friendship slash relationship, whatever it's going to be, between two people. One person who, the young girl that we meet at the beginning of the book, discovers that she can talk to animals or birds, she can understand birds or whatever, and she realizes that she's a witch, she has magic in her life. And the other character, oh, that's Patricia, yeah, Patricia. Yeah. And then Lawrence, he discovers that he has physics or maths or some kind of technology in his bones, not very well explained throughout the book actually what his skills are in terms of technology, but he builds gadgets and builds this little 2-second time machine or whatever it is.
Right.
It just follows through their childhood, and then when they're teenagers, and then when they kind of first start working, and then when they're kind of more successful in their fields as they go through. And so that's kind of the overall structure of the story. And when I was just looking now at before, I was like, oh, let's review this book. And I went and actually looked back at my Kindle app to see what notes I'd made. I realized I hadn't made any notes. I just made three bookmarks, three highlights. And one of them was at the very beginning, page 30, like really early on, Lawrence meets someone and she says, oh, what you should do is read this book. And so she dug around in the basket and handed him a battered paperback called Have Spacesuit Will Travel. And I thought, well, this is kind of setting up who this book is for, in a way. Like, this book is for people who, when they were growing up, Have Spacesuit Will Travel was a big part of their life. I love your facial expressions now as you're looking at this. This book is a book for nerds. This is a book for people who, I mean, it's written, it says that Charlie Jane Anders is the editor-in-chief of IO9, which is like nerd central. It's sort of like, it's about nerd science fiction, fantasy TV and movie and books and stuff. That's what this is for. And Charlie Jane Anders, she knows her audience perfectly, and she knows that putting in a reference to Have Spacesuit Will Travel at the beginning of a book like this sets up the book for the people that she thinks isn't going to enjoy this book. And in some ways, I've talked in the past like about books which are just nerd references and nerd culture. This has it, but there's enough else in this book so it isn't all just nerd references and things. But that one there kind of shows what the level of this book is. You know, what was that book that I read recently? The book was We Are Legion, We Are Bob. And yeah. someone made a comment, actually, which I might as well reply to now. They made a comment saying, like, is there any of these books which are kind of self-referential, like, nerd books? Mm-hmm. They're books about it. Like, he also says, off to see the wizard, off to be the wizard, Ready Player One.
Right.
We are Legion, we are Bob. You know, there's this kind of level of writing, or this style of writing, which is very knowingly for the modern nerd, the modern geek, pop culture person.
But it's also going for very specific generation of people.
Yes, it is people who were either kids in the 80s
right.
or grew up in the 90s
exactly.
and know, or they're steeped enough in the... they're steeped enough in the pop culture of the, let's say, late 70s through to mid 2000s.
You yeah.
know? So I'm talking like once Star Wars hits and all of those Disney movies, science fiction, you know, Black Hole, Last Starfighter, you
yeah.
know,
so
War Games,
kind of...
all of those kind of things. Like, so movies from the 70s through to the 80s and then TV from the 90s. So we're talking 90s Star Trek
yeah.
all the way through up to, let's say the cutoff is around about, what, 2005 with Firefly. And
yeah.
then stuff after that is a bit too recent to reference in books. So in this, they're talking about, oh, we're going to have a Red Dwarf marathon and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which for you doesn't mean anything. Or maybe, have you seen Red Dwarf? Or something, I'm not sure, but for
no,
me means a lot, because when I was 15, Red Dwarf was, you know, that
also,
was
I'm
that
not
was...
I'm not British or
yeah, exactly.
Anglo kind of
exactly. So what I'm saying is that this is, so whoever, I can't remember who commented on that review, but hopefully they're listening now. I'll mention that we talk about it here.
Yeah.
He says, what are the books that do that, like, are there books that do that which are knowingly self I'm not quite sure what the term is, but they kind of know that their audience, what their audience is, and they're specifically tailoring for that audience.
Yeah.
Is there a book which does that well? And this, I don't think does that, this book, All the Birds in the Sky, it is in that same category of a book which is knowingly self-referenced, but that isn't in the end what the book is about. You know, it's about something else than that. Whereas Ready Player One is about somebody who is, like, the story is, know all of this trivia and know these computer games from the 80s and these Atari games or whatever it is. Like, that's what the story is. And Off to Be the Wizard is that. It's about somebody using these references and knowledge of playing D&D to become a good wizard. And We Are Legion, We Are Bob is about somebody who is a Star Trek fan suddenly having the powers to go around and explore the galaxy, as in Star Trek. You know,
yeah.
This book isn't about that. So I think that's the difference here, is that this book has that background in it, but is about more than that. You're
yes.
just sitting there all
no,
you're
the
sitting
thing
there
is,
this entire
so
time, you're rolling your eyes all the time.
It's so difficult for me to say anything about this in the
okay.
way that you say, oh, this is good, this is...
I haven't said anything
such,
about this
blah,
book
blah.
That is good.
No, but
I haven't said this book is good yet.
For example, those references, those pop culture references, they always stood out to me. Every single time there was one, it was like bang in my face.
Yeah, it felt like that to me as well. However, this book wasn't... The pop culture references were there, but it wasn't about those things. Like,
yeah.
It was about a relationship between two people. It was about the conflict of, like, how to do good in the world. You know, it was about more than that.
Yes, it
Whereas
was.
Ready Player One was literally about somebody knowing facts from 1980s video games to be able to succeed in life. Do you
yeah,
understand?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I
do you understand
it.
That? And We Are Legion, We Are Bob is literally about somebody going, I'm going to name myself after Star Trek characters.
Well, I haven't read this book.
Well, you'd have... Well, you probably... You probably wouldn't enjoy it. I'm just taking my jump off him a bit too hot. When we were sitting before, we were sitting, and now we're sitting in the sun. Or I'm sitting directly in the sun,
yeah.
which is why I'm suddenly a lot hotter. But the sun will move around in a bit. Anyway, so I think that's the difference between this book. However, if we're talking about those books, I think we mentioned this when we were talking about the Ready Player One, is that if you want a book which is about someone going into a computer game and seeing all these pop culture references, I think the Otherland books that you're...
Oh, yeah, I'm currently listening to the Blue River...
Yeah, River
Fire,
of Blue Fire,
yeah,
whatever it's called.
Yeah.
The second
it's
book...
full of it.
You're listening to the audio play, the German
yes,
audio play.
But it is good of... I've read the books...
Yeah.
Along, I read the excerpt of
yeah.
this one, and so I can tell it is really, really close to it, and you
yeah.
get all the important things
yeah.
very
so,
well.
But are you going to read the book as well? Because the last one, you listened to the audio play, and then you read the book.
I might, after finishing The Reality Dysfunction,
yeah.
Might get back to that one.
Well, tell me when you do, because I'm going to be joining in with that as well. But the point is, that is a book about somebody going in, but the pop culture references aren't pop culture. I mean, only pop culture. The references are, like, literature and movies and other things going back to... Well, of course, at some points they're going back to Egypt, they're going back to Greece, they're going through the epics of, you know... Alice in Wonderland. So that's the kind of level that I like it. Even though sometimes I do think some books are a bit annoying when they just go, oh, right, and now I'm going to put in the obligatory Alice in Wonderland reference. Mm. Or, like literally the worst part of Hyperion is the last line where they all join arms and go, we're off to see the wizard and skip to see... And I'm just like, if you're going to reference books, anyway, that kind of thing. I don't mind references in the books. I don't mind literary allusions and movie allusions and all that kind of stuff. But then when the story becomes that... Anyway, so that's my first note that I made. And that's the only note that I made about pop culture references. However, okay. I think that's my statement on it.
Okay.
You have some others. But then there was just some funny things. There's this, like, early on... page 35, just funny lines. For example, it says, she'd misplaced herself in the woods over and over until she knew by heart every way to get lost. And that, for me, is a really... That's just funny writing. And very much in the early chapters, like the first five or six chapters, are very, to me, very funny. I was grinning, I was laughing. The humour does tail off a bit, and I think that's a bit jarring. Well, not jarring, it's a kind of a bit... uneven towards the end, where it's suddenly like, and now we're talking about the end of the world and blah blah blah, and I'm like, you know, I kind of enjoyed it when it was a little bit lighter and a little bit more, you know, talking to birds, making 2 second time machines. It's kind of like that frivolous lightness at the start, and I understand, yeah, you grow up and you put behind you these childish things and all that kind of thing, but the book never, when it sets itself up as like a funny comedy book with writing like that, I kind of feel, I mean, I know it's difficult to keep that up throughout an entire book, and it doesn't do it, but there was always some lightness, and there was always some clever turns of phrase, and the conversations between some of the characters, like Lawrence and his devastatingly good-looking girlfriend, or whatever, Seraphine, or whatever, or something like that, like, their conversations, and the way he managed to get himself into these issues, and into these problems, and then, kind of, as he was talking about the relationships, it's just fun. I just found it funny, and some of the conversations that Patricia is having with some of her friends, where she doesn't understand what her role is in that relationship. They're having a conversation, she doesn't realise what the conversation is about, but we were hearing it from her point of view.
Yeah.
I just found them funny. Later on, there was this funny this line: he had enough nervous energy for 9 ferrets. That is a funny line, and I made a note of that because it was one of the only like funny turns of frames, like funny metaphors that were brought up near the end of the book. And then by then it didn't really fit in. It's like, your language has grown up, but then you say enough nervous energy for 9 ferrets, suddenly made me think, that's a line from chapter 5 in the book, not a line from book 3, chapter 7, or whatever I'd got up to by that point.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
at the beginning, we both started reading it at the same time. So we were like hanging out in bed, reading it. And I remember that time at the beginning, you were chuckling along, I was chuckling along.
Yeah.
It was fun. And I only started making
notes
and stuff. Like, it was on my page 158.
Yeah.
So also book 3.
Is when you started like, getting annoyed. That's when the adults, they're not kids anymore.
Exactly.
Adults, yeah.
When they were kids, I kind of like still had this feeling that it was kind of like there was this lightness and there was this good humor in it.
Yeah.
Although I already got a bit annoyed by the way that the characters were laid out as characters. I started quite early on, but I got really annoyed at when they were adults and when it all got like, and I think like, oh my God, why?
Why
reading this?
Really? Okay, yeah. Well, let me just say, before you get into some more of your bigger criticisms as we go through, because I think you've got lots of notes there, and we'll work through your notes. I just want to say, overall, this book, I had fun most of the way. I mean, like, I really enjoyed the first part. The middle part was okay. It did kind of fall apart for me towards the end.
Yeah.
Especially when they brought in, I think there was something called, like, the Total Destruction Machine, and I was just like, oh, for goodness.
Yep.
You know, and it was kind of like, because it's a story about magic and technology, I always felt like I never felt that technology had the upper edge. Like, in this conflict between, the magic was just always so The magic was so easy for the magicians and the technology was so difficult for the technologists.
Yes.
But then some of the technology which was influenced by magic that came up, like, you know, the caddies and things like that, that was suddenly too easy. So there was always this mix-mash. Like when you have worlds, like science fictional or, you know, secondary worlds where fantasy and science fiction mixes, mm-hmm. it's kind of, like, you have to... reading this book makes me understand why that is so difficult to pull off.
Yeah,
you know,
it is very...
And there's very few things. Of course, we've been watching the Marvel movies, and in the Marvel movies, Thor is magical and does everything like that kind of stuff. But then Iron Man is very, you know, he's a robot, it's science fictional.
These are both really good in their world.
Yes, but they have to be, they have to be established in their own movies. And then when they mix together, you can go, okay, this is a world... Like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is somewhere... Oh, yeah, and also, what is it, Doctor Strange as well. He's doing his, like, portals and magic cloaks and all that kind of... There's magic stuff happening over there, and there's gods and stuff over here with Thor, and there's, like big technology, like Ultron, you know, like, world-changing technology. And then there's, like, Ant-Man, which is, like, one guy with one invention on this other thing over here. But these are all these kind of things that are established in their own worlds, like, with their own rules first.
Yeah.
And then when they mix together in an Avengers movie or in a Captain America movie...
You just accept it.
We're just gonna accept this happens. But there's a reason why Thor isn't in the Civil War movie. Because if Thor turns up, like, he's just too powerful. And you know, you can't mix Hulk and Thor. Like, Hulk and Thor can't have a battle because they're both too powerful. And this is like the perfect nerd argument here of like, who would win in a fight, Thor or the Hulk? But the point is, the reason why that's not an interesting story or it's a difficult story is because they're so individually powerful in their own worlds, that bringing them together. However, in this book, All the Birds in the Sky, it's like saying, okay, what is more powerful? Is it going to be technology or is it going to be magic? And I never really felt that paid off. You know, magic infused technology, but there was never a time when technology ever threatened magic.
No.
You know?
No, it was always like, there was this one section where they were on this cruise ship thing and they managed to keep the magic out.
Yeah, but it was never explained why.
No.
It was just like, oh,
that
and
section.
now magic is, and it's like, oh, and now they've done something technology that magic can't affect. And I'm just like, when did that happen?
Yeah.
How did they do that? What's that going on?
When we go through my,
yeah,
that word
something like that
again.
So overall, like, the if you think the premise of this book is what is more powerful, is it technology or is it magic? Of course, the answer is love is all powerful. You know, that's the answer to the book. And when you realize that, you go, oh, okay, so it isn't a story about which is more powerful. Is it going to be magic? Or which is going to provide the answer? Even not more powerful, but which provides the answers? Is it going to be technology or is it going to be magic? In the end, you realize, oh, that isn't what the book is about. And really, that's not what the book is about. It's about the relationship, you know, about these two people and what their connection is. And actually, what keeps them apart is the question of what is more powerful or what's the answer, magic or technology. But the book doesn't answer that. It just says that is the problem that these two people have had in their friendship and in their relationship. This has been the thing between them.
Yeah,
so,
and I think for me it feels more like the technology and this fantasy aspect, the magic and the technology, feels too much like a replacement of personality issues.
Yeah.
You know, one has the magic, one has the technology, they both struggle with self-esteem, how to position themselves in the world. This feels too much like it's not about the magic and the technology. It's more of a replacement for...
Yeah,
it's more like a metaphor.
It could be someone going, oh, I'm a socialist. You're a libertarian and I'm a socialist or whatever. And we can't agree on what's better of those kind of things.
Exactly.
And, you know, it could have... This book could have been that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you could replace this with any other issue, like, doesn't really... But that's the whole problem for me, was that it never really came across as something, like... honest and like something I wanted to know more about.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
That was yeah.
So let me just at this point I'm gonna give my star rating.
How was it? Three?
Three and a half. Let's say 3.5 because I did really laugh. I really enjoyed the first part. It didn't overall hold together well enough by the end of the book. It's certainly not the best book of 2016 that I read. It's it's just one of those books where I was like, oh, okay, that's a book. And but also, it's a book like Ancillary Justice, the first of those. Did you finish off that series?
Yeah, I finished it.
You know,
way better.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's nowhere close to even Ancillary Justice. But that it's like I say. But because I was laughing a lot at the start, I feel like I kind of enjoyed this in a way that had like Ancillary Justice has almost no humor in it. I mean, there are some humor, but it's like in the second book there is more, and in the third, but you know, there is when the different characters come in, there is a little bit more to play with.
A lot more serious.
Yeah, but it's sort of like a lot more. Okay, this is a spaceship, blah blah, and military science. But you know, it's a different side of things. But when Ancillary Justice won the Hugo Award and the Nebula Award and the Arthur C. Clarke Award or the Locus Award, whatever, all of the awards that won, while I was thinking, okay, I don't think this is the best book of the year, although maybe there wasn't a better book that I read that year, I could totally understand why it had appealed to so many people and why it had won the awards. And while this book is not a great book for me, it's a merely enjoyable triviality.
Yeah.
On that level, as a merely enjoyable triviality, I enjoyed it, but also I understand why people read this book and go, oh, this was my favourite book of last year. I don't think anyone's going to say this book is a greater literary achievement than, say, what was that one that I just read before? Nine Fox Gambit, which is a book that I just read a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, talking to Jenny from the SFF Audio podcast, I'm going, no, wait, forget what I said about my favourite book of 2016. This is it, but I was too late to say that, you know.
Reading Envy.
Yeah, Reading Envy, what did I say? SFR. Reading Envy. Yeah, Reading Envy, best book of 2016. I said the best book that I read this year was probably this one. And then it was like, it was too late for me to go, no, best book that I read last year was Nine. This book is like on a literary level, on a storytelling level, on a personality within the book, you know, character level. Like, there is just nothing in this book which even comes close to Nine Fox Gambit on any level. But I totally understand. It's like, oh yeah, this is a kind of nice read. And, you know, you understand what I'm saying there. It's like as a frivolity, it's as popcorn movie goes.
I think because of its, in my opinion, averageness,
yeah,
it probably appeals to quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because it is so average.
Yeah, and you that's know, the thing. Like, but that's why I said, oh, they had Red Dwarf Marathons, mm-hmm, and they gave them the book, Have Spaceship, Will Travel. It's sort of like, if Have Spaceship, Will Travel for you is a book, or Red Dwarf is a book that you like and enjoy at this level, this book is for you because this book is at the same level as Red Dwarf.
Is it?
Well, Red Dwarf is something where you go, okay, every week they have like 25 minutes to set up a science fiction premise,
mm-hmm,
play around with that premise in a funny way, have characters insult each other, and then finish, and then move on with this, like, to the next episode. That's what this is. It's sort of like, we've got these characters, there's a premise, and I mean, it's not even remotely the same as Red Dwarf, or similar to it in any way, but it kind of fulfills the same role of just sort of like, oh, like, yeah, last night when we were looking through Netflix and we're like, oh, what should we watch? It's like, oh, let's just watch an episode of Firefly. And you're just like, oh, okay. And it's so, and it's just so
safe,
easy, safe. It's like, you know, you're going to enjoy it. It's fine like that.
Yeah.
Whereas like Nine Fox Gambit is like, okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to watch a season of, I don't know, whatever it's going to be, but like something which is like, everything about it is like to that next level, but you don't always want to be watching season finales of Breaking Bad or whatever it's going to be, which is sort of like, oh, this is like the pinnacle of television this year or whatever it's going to be, you know. But you just go, and but at the end of it, you're just a bit like, okay, well,
did this?
Yeah, I got through that, and I understand it's really technical. However, I also thought that Nine Fox Gambit was amazing on like an enjoyment level and a technical level and all these other things. But sometimes, you don't always want to be watching
series.
You don't always want to be watching the most serious drama or the most mind-blowing movie that you've ever seen. Sometimes you just want to watch, you know, La La Land or something.
Well, that brings me to my part of it. Unfortunately, we just did watch La La Land, and we're so devastated after
it. No, we weren't devastated.
We were so disappointed we left the cinema.
Yeah, this is actually, just a quick aside into La La Land. We were like, I'd not heard anything about it, except I'd heard some things that it was good. And then we were like, oh, now it's been nominated for all the Oscars.
Yeah,
and I'm
14.
Like, oh, 14 Oscar nominations. And we were just like, oh, let's just go and see it. We're looking forward to that. And then when we came...
Because also, we enjoy musical films.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, why not? Who doesn't enjoy a good singing in the rain or
exactly.
something?
Exactly. Unfortunately, yeah. that wasn't maybe the best to think of before. And,
well, yeah, we shouldn't have... But, anyway,
I don't know.
It's the first time I've ever paid money... Well, actually, Juliana bought the ticket. But it's the first time I've ever had tickets to go to the cinema. Paid for tickets to go to the cinema. And I've gone to the cinema and I've walked out halfway through the movie.
Yes.
I've never done that before in any other movie. You said you did it once.
I did it once, but that was a late night showing and...
Of like a Fantastic Four movie.
Fantastic Four or something? Yeah. I don't even remember if it was Fantastic Four.
Anyway, I don't want to get into La La Land because it is literally one of the most disappointing movies that I've ever seen.
Yes.
Oh no, I did see Suicide Squad the other day. But there's a different level of disappointment when I'm categorizing...
But you watched it on the plane or something.
Yeah, I just watched it on the plane. But there's a categorization with movies that, like, I have the ultimate disappointment where I've heard the movie is bad and then I watch it. And it's worse than I could imagine. Like it's, you know, it's disappointing when there's a movie which everyone thinks is good and then I don't like it or think it's bad. That's a different disappointment from knowing a movie is bad. Like, for example...
But this was a neutral movie. It was, what? I didn't have any, like, I didn't know any...
What, La La Land?
Yeah, I didn't know any, it was neutral to me.
It's got 14 Oscar nominations and I'd heard some buzz about it, but again, I hadn't read any proper reviews of it and it was just awful. Anyway... Don't want to go into it. Everything about the movie, like, we went through the Oscar nominations, and it was, like, nominated for this thing, and I'm like, why is...
What?
Yeah, I actually have issues with all of these things. Sound design, like, we even got down to the sound design.
I was sitting in the cinema and noticing all those things being really obvious and bad.
Yeah.
Like, the costumes. Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, let's get back. Well, I don't want to be too negative. However, my rating, All the Birds in the Sky, 3.5 stars, let's say, just for this. I know that when we do a review together, put it this way, I always average out the two star ratings. People are going to look at the star rating and think, oh, Luke really hated that book. Because often it happens that I'll rate something like 4 stars and you'll be like, oh, I don't get it. And you rate it 2 stars and then it goes down to 3 stars and it upsets it. This time it's the other way around.
Yeah. I think it's the first time, actually.
No, in Pavane, when we were in Pavane.
Yeah, but that was more of an understanding issue from my side. It wasn't like I didn't enjoy it because... I really didn't enjoy it.
I just
didn't get it.
Yeah, it was more of a disconnect with the book rather than a dislike of the book. So I gave this 3.5 stars. I haven't actually put it on Goodreads or whatever. But you gave this star on Goodreads. You said to me, this is only the 4th book that I've ever given 1 star to on Goodreads. Okay, so give it to us.
Yeah.
Let's
so
do
the
it.
Thing is, I haven't actually written a review of it yet because it is hard for me. For some reasons. I read this book first, and as I said before, the beginning was fun, I chuckled, it was good. I had issues, but it wasn't too bad. And then I continued on, and the more I continued, the more was like going, ugh, after every, 10th sentence or something, and then I wrote things down about it. And then, once I finished it, I read something about the author on the internet.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that clarified so much what was going wrong for me in the book.
Oh, really?
And yes. And and so that is like this weird kind of like twist after I've read it and not enjoying it and then reading about the author and understanding
more. What about the author? She's the editor of a website.
Yes. She's not only the editor, but also she's a transgender person, which is fine. I know, like, I'm totally.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the thing
I literally don't know anything about it.
Exactly.
Let me have a look on.
And this plays so much into this book. This book has two characters which have like these strong, like they have really weird backgrounds. Both their families are kind of not really nice to them, not really welcoming them, not really saying, "Yeah, you're a good person. I love you just because you are." So in this way, they both have very low self-esteem about themselves. That I was thinking of, how do the other people see me? What is my place in the world? All these issues in these characters were so strong to me that I felt like this was annoying to me when I read it. After reading about the author, I kind of get it. Of course, like it feels a bit like this book is like a therapeutical session a bit. Because it has the technology and all the kind of things and stuff. It's good. She's enjoying this. And on the other hand, she's like having these two characters which really struggle in society with the other people around them and with themselves.
Yeah, but isn't this a good thing? I mean,
for me, it wasn't a good thing because I never really felt like the description of those characters wasn't like I was thinking, oh, this is really, they're having a hard life here or something. Or I felt I didn't feel pity or anything, but I also didn't feel like I would want to come and hug them or like help them out or
so
something.
So you had issues with the personalities
of the main two characters. Both of them had these weird kind of. Lawrence was like thinking like, "Hi, Serafina, she's so beautiful. What is she doing with me? I don't want to lose her."
All men have those kind of issues with women. No, like when they're in a relationship, they're all like, "Oh, I'm not good enough for this woman, and what does she see in me?" That's like
really,
yeah. That's a normal, really common thing.
Yeah, I understand that you think like that person is too good for me.
Yeah.
But then, kind of like, how is your thinking about yourself? How is it? It's really low. If you always think, it's not only the girlfriends. It's like all the way through, these people think about themselves in a really low way.
Well, that's fine. That's what their characters are.
Totally fine. Not for me.
Everyone has the...
And then even amongst themselves, they are like that.
Like when they talk to each other.
When they are with each other. Like Patricia and...
But you don't want to read about perfect people being perfect with each other. You want to read about broken people being broken with each other.
No, I don't.
Really?
And I don't really... The thing is, I spend so much time with them, and there's no progression. There's no, like, I can analyze my behavior towards other people, and then kind of, like, see, oh, either I'm ignoring what other people think about me, and I'm going to just be fine with myself, or... not. And here it's just like all the way through they have these like they struggle with themselves,
okay,
with other people, even with them. Like, it would be good if they find each other,
yeah,
and then because their struggle they find each other, oh, and say like, oh, we both have the same struggle here, let's become one against the others.
Yeah,
that also doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So it's always... So these two...
Is this... I'm not sure what your problem is. It's like you just didn't like the main characters.
No, I did...
Because if it's just that, I don't think that's something wrong with the book.
No, there was so much more. Let me go through here.
Okay. I just think it's weird that you, after reading that someone is transgendered or something like that, that suddenly makes you...
No.
Because I never picked that up. I mean, just read Charlie Jane Anders. I didn't even know.
No, I was reading the book and I was wondering why this is such a big...
But is that you projecting onto the author than projecting onto the characters?
No, this is me getting more of an understanding...
Of why they might... Why she might have written the characters in that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I was...
I get that. I didn't pick that up from the book.
Yeah. But... So,
okay.
And then, like, I have these markings, so...
Bookmarks,
and the first thing, for example, like, there were some things, like, towards the end, there was this section where they had suddenly this transformed cruise ship, wherever that came from, and then it was mightily, where was it, like, it was...
A total destruction machine. They had a Sea Vania or whatever it was called, the oil rig cruise ship country that they used to get away from the apocalyptic.
Towards the end, it was like most of Lawrence's friend had gone to live at Sidonia.
Oh, Sidonia.
An oil rig and cruise ship that Rod Birch had lashed together and turned into an independent nation in the North Pacific. That by itself could be a book by itself, and it's just like,
well, that exists. Sealand. It's in the North Sea. It's an old Second World War observation, like viewpoint, defensive thing.
Yeah, but you don't. Just,
and someone set it up as an independent country.
Yeah, but you don't just set this up within a few weeks or months.
Yeah, but this is just a reference to, in Snow Crash, they go out and there's that floating country that's floating around the Pacific or something. It's just that kind of reference. I mean, it's just that idea.
Okay, I get it. But the thing is, in here, it's just turned up. It looked like it was just.
I mean, it's lazy world building, but.
Yeah,
but how does that destroy your enjoyment of the whole book?
Just the mention in a side sentence at the beginning for my first comment was when there was a thing they held each other. It was when like there was some romance going on. They held each other, both of them vibrating until Lawrence had to pee. He had to remind himself not to flush after only peeing because everyone was conserving water.
Yeah.
You get a sentence like that and think like, what? They're saving water?
Because the whole country is...
that point.
Yeah, it was when they had sex for the first time, because that's after they first had sex. Spoiler, they have sex. It's like the whole world is collapsing and they're having to save energy and save water. Like, all of the eastern seaboard has been destroyed and there's loads of, like, the parents have died. All these different kind of crazy stuff has gone on.
No, that was later.
No, because that... It happened as they were having sex the second time or whatever it was. And they get phone calls and then it was all going down. But at that point, it was still pretty bad point.
For me, it was very, like, suddenly. And also, the way of destroying, like, I'm not saying destroying
the
a
world.
Moment. No, yeah. I'm saying...
But that's what the book is about. It's a book about people not being able to express what they feel and not doing... And that's what happens there when they actually finally express their... feelings towards each other. You think, oh, this is going to be a hopeful moment, but of course it has to be broken straight away, and that's what they do.
But this is again what it comes down to, what my expectation is. If you have two broken people in a broken world, that they come together and they express some, like, honest love to each other. I never felt that this was actually, it was more like a, who's left around me? Oh yeah, I really like this guy somehow. I don't know why, because I don't really know, but yeah, let's just fall in love. That wasn't love to me.
But they'd been in each other's lives for so long.
Is that a reason? I mean,
I know, it's like a Harry Met Sally kind of thing. You know, they meet and then they go apart and then they meet.
No.
Harry Met Sally is like every 9 years they get back together again and finally they're like, oh well, you know, this didn't work out over there.
Yeah, but there's more progression.
Carrie Fisher went off with the other guy.
Anyway, I did so, and then just after that there was this when they met other friends or something.
Yeah.
And then over and over, three times within, like, a chapter or something, it was the young person of indeterminate gender.
Yeah, what's her name? I guess her name was Charlie in the book? No, I'm not sure who it was. Whoever that character was, yeah.
I don't know.
They turned up a few times. They were there when we first met them. Well, it's difficult with the pronouns now. The first met the person of indeterminate gender when Patricia is older and she's doing magic. But then when we go back, when we have the flashbacks to when she's in magic school, what's the name of the person, the young person of indeterminate gender? I can't even remember. But it's someone with a name like, I can't remember. It's like Charlie, which could be, oh, not Charlie, but it's a name which could be either.
Yeah. It's one of the magic friends. And the thing is, I have no problem when this is mentioned once, and then I know it.
But it was just a running gag in the book. The person of indeterminate gender was a running gag. It's like it was like a something that they could keep coming up against. But like you say, this is about people who aren't sure how to exist in the world and don't have all the social skills. Like you say, when you hear the conversations with Lawrence and Serafina from his point of view, you're kind of cringing, knowing what he's doing there. And then he even realizes what he's doing, is cringing about it as well. Patricia has the same kind of thing. So it's just with Patricia, it's sort of like it's putting her into a social situation with someone who she doesn't know the gender of.
Does it matter? I don't care.
It's a way of... You don't care, but the point is, it's an obstacle for a character to come against, to not know how to work in that social situation. And that's what this whole book is about. It's about two people who don't know where their place is in the world. And when they meet other people who also don't know their place in the world. You know, like, there's a character who has AIDS and then goes along and fits in here. And then there's these other people, like, near the end of the book. They're people trying to find their places, like, they start doing the madrigal singing. This is what this book is about. It's about people trying to find their place in the world and coming up against someone of an indeterminate gender and not knowing what pronouns to use and not knowing how to ask about it and not knowing how to do it is just part of making your way in the world and a modern part of, you know, living in San Francisco.
You get it totally wrong here. You think I have a problem with a person like mentioning that is not the thing.
No, I'm saying the function of the person of indeterminate gender in the book.
I understand the function of
that
person.
It's a running joke. It's a running gag. So of course it's going to come up three times.
I understand the function of this person, but the problem is that it is just the function of this person. It is never like there's no description in a great literary way. You can do that.
This isn't a great literary book.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to again. When I notice these things, it's like these big cuts of interruption and sometimes mention something here or there where I think this is important, this could be more of a thing, and in other books this gets more of an exploration. Here it's just a side thing mentioned across, and that just doesn't, the whole thing doesn't hold up as a whole, as a construct to me. You know, like, there are words that just, like, while I'm reading a book, I don't want to read words. I want to read stories and, like, situations and characterizations. I don't want to continuously stumble across something, like, that stands out so much. I understand what the function of the young person of indeterminate gender is. But I don't want to, like...
But there was loads of those things in this book.
Yeah.
Because that's what
every
the book
time
is.
I stumbled across it, and it wasn't like coming to me as a body, as a structure or something. It was like all the time I was like going across on the river and bumping here, bumping there, bumping there.
Yeah.
And I get it.
You
that
were just
this
bouncing
is,
off things rather than flowing
exactly.
over things.
And the thing is, I don't. This is, of course, what the book is about. This is like the meaning of this book is not to be like flowy, flowy, flowy. I get it, but it's done in this weird, in this not very good way.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, and
Okay, let's move on. Some more of your notes then.
The technology in it, I get it that this Charlie Jane Anders is writing she's the editor of this website, which is a technology website and blogging and pop culture, whatever. I think
Io9 is not, it's a science fiction blog.
Yeah.
It focuses on science fiction, fantasy, futurism, science, technology, and related areas.
Exactly. But then... I had these big, massive issues with the technology aspect, especially with I'm reading all these books with this hard science fiction stuff.
Yeah, but this isn't hard science fiction.
No, and then it comes up an anti-gravity thing. What was the last book where we read, and then they had this? Then they had this thing. Then they pressed the button, and everything just changed, and no gravity and stuff. This is like the same thing. It's like, oh, it's handy that you figure out anti-gravity machine, and it kind of doesn't really work, but then you have to progress it because it's the end of the world. But the whole technology, what is this? So you can't just come up with the thing that, like, oh, this is like a tuning fork. It's the destruction thing. I just bang it and everything is whatever. That's just not good science fiction for me. And then like a 2-second time machine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that you find this fun.
It's a joke. It's like,
I just think it'll get what? He's coming up with it, and then later on in the book it's like, oh, and he came up with a 2-second time machine. Now, because he did this, he's like good to come in our circle of scientists, yeah, because he came up with this by himself.
I think what I understand about the world that's been created in this book is if you start off the book and it's about birds talking in a magic tree, and then there's the next thing is the technology, and someone creates a wristwatch which has a 2-second time machine in it, and then he creates an artificial intelligence which is being trained by magic, you know.
Which I understand, like, as a child you have like these things that I was always sort of thinking.
Let me finish. If that is the start of the world, if that is the start of the book, if that is the foundation of the world that we're existing in, that somebody can, in chapter 2 or chapter 1, invent a 2-second time machine, when halfway through the book someone comes up with an anti-gravity machine, I don't suddenly have questions of how does that science work. I just think this world is a place where a 9-year-old kid can make a 2-second time machine from a kit. Like, if that is the world that we're living in, anti-gravity is like I don't even worry about that. I mean, that's not what the rules of the world are.
When I hear a 9-year-old child is coming up with a 2-second...
He didn't come up with it. Yeah. He built it from a kit.
I understand it. But the problem there is, was that... I was always thinking, was that only his thinking? Like, oh, I close my eyes for 2 seconds and then, like... Was that only a thing of his mind?
No, it was a technology. That's what the world is like. The world is... This is a world where trees, magical trees exist. People talk to birds. People can heal each
and
other.
And that is always the question.
With magic. And technologically wise, it's a place where the Elon Musk character is building a rocket ship that'll take him to space and then gives up and then goes, no, actually, I'm going to work on this thing. Oh, no, I'm not going to work on that thing anymore. Oh, I'm going to work on this thing. You know, that is, you know, and a 9-year-old kid from a kit could make a 2-second time machine and later an anti-gravity machine that sends people into alternative dimensions. You know, if the book starts with 2-second time machines, you can't knock it for later on having anti-gravity and sending people into different dimensions and blocking magic. You know, I can't believe that you think that's an issue with the book. It isn't good science fiction, but it isn't inconsistent world building where time machines and anti-gravity machines can exist in the same world.
I'm not saying it's inconsistent world building. I'm saying that, like, the whole way through, I was thinking, is this all happening in these people's minds? And then other people supported
really
this.
Happening.
And I was thinking, like,
magic does exist. Hogwarts does exist in this book.
I understand this.
It's a book where both Hogwarts exist and Elon Musk exists.
Yeah, but if it would exist, then, like, the impact on the world, on the other parts of the world,
yes,
would
that is
be
the...
so much better.
Yeah.
Different.
This is one of those things. This is something that I... Okay, let me explain my biggest issue with the world building here. I'm fine with all of these crazy things happening within this book. And like I said before, it's really difficult to have a world where magic exists and technology and all these different technology exists. You know, it's even then more difficult to say that those exist in our world. For example, I've only ever seen the Harry Potter movies. I've not read the books. Mm. But it's very clear to me that at the beginning of each movie, they set up a different set of magic rules. And then those magic rules play out for that book or that movie. And then in the next one, you kind of ignore all the magic that's happened until then. You're just continuing over with the characters and the main story, you know. So, for example, in one of the Harry Potters, they have this time travel thing. Yeah. And Hermione's going backwards and forwards through time. In the next story, or in the next movie, you'd think, that time machine thing that she was... Or that time travel thing that she was doing in the last book...
That would come in really handy now.
But you just go, this is a new story. And it's a clever way of... I mean, I'm not sure if J.K. Rowling kind of had that in mind very specifically. I mean, she's very clever. She could be thinking that way. But it's one of those things that as you... And it's the same with the Marvel Universe. It's like, you have to just go, I don't want to think what the other superheroes are doing during this adventure. Because what you should be doing in every adventure is saying, let's just call in Iron Man and Thor, and they'll sort this situation out.
But in this one, there's every single story is an individual book.
Yes.
An individual story.
Let me come to
this.
And
not all in one.
Yeah. This is the problem with this book, which I don't think it tackled very well. Is if there is a world where magic exists and the world where this crazy technology exists, this book doesn't do a good job of exploring that. And it also doesn't do a good job of exploring how magic and technology affects the real world. Because the message of the book seems to be technology is always going to be bad. And the only reason why the magic people aren't solving all the problems is that they want free will to exist. And they want the world, you know, they want humans to be able to, you know, be free to screw up the world if they want to. And then the whole anti-aggrandizement thing.
Oh, yeah, that.
The problem with this book is that it assumes a world where everything is the same as our world is now, but, you know, 15 years in the future where there's more pollution and more terrorism and more wars and something's happened in, you know, the Arabian Peninsula that we don't know, you know, it's not quite clear about, and something's happening over in Korea and they're not quite sure what happened in Korea. You know, there's those things that are going, oh, it'd be a bit insensitive to do this thing now that everything, all the shit's gone down in Korea. And we never discover what that is. So it's kind of into the future, but you think in a world where 2-second time machines exist, what would that allow for? Like, what new technology would that allow for in the future? And where this exists, it wouldn't. You know, so it's like our world, 15 years in the future, plus imagining a technology that has existed up until that point, but has never affected the world until that point. So there isn't the interplay between them, doesn't work. But again, this story isn't so much about that. It's about those things getting in the way of a relationship between two people who don't know what they're doing in the world and have imposter syndrome and aren't in control of their destinies.
Yeah. The aggrandization thing was another thing that it just jumped in my face so much. Like, these magic people have this, like, aggrandization. Don't make yourself bigger than the
more
world.
Important.
More important.
Yeah.
The thing is, that makes these, like, this whole impact is just, I will crush you under my thumb. Every time that Patricia is starting to think of her, like, okay, maybe I am not that bad. Maybe this when I'm thinking, oh, I'm actually can do good. And then somebody says, don't do aggrandization aggrandizement or whatever it was. It always felt to me like she was becoming, like, she was getting like a natural self-esteem. And every time somebody on the outside said,
it's a, like I say, it's a running obstacle for these characters to get over.
It's not like I'm not liking it. But the thing is, if you write a story, there must be some, it's not between Patricia and Lawrence. It's not between Patricia and their families. It's not between Patricia and whatever, their workplace. It's like, there's no way, these people never get accepted from nobody. Not even a single,
that's
not
what
even
the
from
book
themselves.
Is about.
I get it. The problem is that it's so out, like, it's so massive, this problem, that you see that you can have a problem, but in a story, when you want to tell something, there must be like a thing that finally they. I don't know. This is the whole world building problem within where I think, like, there must be something where these people can finally relax into, and it never got to that point, never. And the problem was then also it wasn't described in like a literary way where I thought, okay, this I can accept this, and this is about, the thing is, there was
it's
never
not
a solution.
Book.
There was never a solution. There was never like a. Like, you know, if Patricia and Lawrence, this is the whole point, this is why I was getting so upset about it, that these two people, where they struggle with them within themselves, with against the world, against their people who are meant to be close to them, they are never close to anybody, not even towards each other. And this book could have been so much more powerful for me if there would be the solution. Okay, there are these two people who have similar issues which are different to each other, quite opposite. And then they would come together in a natural way, which then would, like,
They did come together in a natural way.
It was not.
The thing that brought them together was a mixture of technology and magic.
No.
It was.
They didn't come together.
Yeah, they did. There was a whole thing where the caddy was making them come together and hang out together all the time.
Yeah, but that was never. The conversations in their heads when they were with each other, it was never like a. It was always like a forced thing. It was always like, oh, now I'm together with Lawrence again. Maybe it is a sign. Maybe I... blah, 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 blah.
But that's what the book was about.
It was always like, oh, Lawrence is actually not that cool. Or Patricia is actually... What is she doing with this magic thing? What is she doing with this? This isn't really good. And
okay.
I don't really like her. But she's here all the time. Maybe I should just give it a go.
Yeah.
What kind of, like... affection is this? There's no affection.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, I'm really impressed by your ranting, but like, I know it's one of these weird, maybe this is what it's like when people listen to me rant about a book and stuff, and I'm just like, but that is what the book is. All of the things that you're having problems about, that is what the book is about. That's what I thought the book was about for me. It was about these two characters getting over all this kind of stuff and coming to all of the issues that you're having in the book, because that is what the book is. That is what the book is. Those issues that you're saying, and these issues that the characters have with each other, and their internal monologues and stuff, that is what the book is about. And that's what I said at the start. Like, the whole end of the world stuff and the magic versus technology stuff, those are subplots in the book of Patricia and Lawrence getting to know themselves and getting together over the course of the book.
But for me, exactly, this is the problem. I want to read a book where I read a book, have a story, and not constantly having the plot hitting in my face. Do you understand?
Yeah.
I want to be treated as like an intelligent reader. I don't want to constantly read. This is what this book is about. This is what this book is about. Constantly.
But this book is for the nerds who aren't interested in that. This is for this book is a book for nerds who have the same I don't want to say that I don't have these issues, because I do identify with these characters and stuff. But, and that's what I say, like, if this book is for someone whose go-to first science fiction book that they read is Have Spacesuit Will Travel, literally I've done like two full podcasts talking about how that much that book affected my life and how, like, I live my life. That is one of the main influences of how I live my life, that book.
Maybe I will read it now then.
What, Have Spacesuit Will Travel? But it's that is the book. So this is the book for me to see this. I am not Patricia and I am not Lawrence, but I also have imposter syndrome when I'm in situations where I'm like, oh, when am I going to be found out? Like, when, you know, the whole, like, when am I going to be found out and realize that I don't know what I'm doing in life and people think
I'm
this great
kid. Nobody knows what they're doing in life.
Yes, I know.
Nobody.
That's what this book is about. And I've had exactly the same thing in relationships where I'm together with someone and I'm like, oh, what do they see in me? Oh, I'm not sure if I'm the right person for this kind of thing. You know, the whole, oh, will she dump me or will I dump her first? Or, but I don't want to dump her. Because then that's bad, but then she, so I'm going to say something to, you know, I haven't been in all of these situations, but I identify with the impulses and the urges and the thought processes behind those kind of things. And like I say, this book is for nerds and people like, and nerds like me, you know, again, I don't want to be above anybody in this way.
Look, you make
this
it
is
sound,
what the book is for.
You make it sound now as if I would have never, I think, every single person on earth.
This book is for the, this is a book for IO9 readers. You know, this is a book for people who go to a website about nerd science fiction and fantasy TV series. That's all, that is the level of what this book is. This is a book for people who think Firefly is the greatest ever TV show. It isn't the greatest ever TV show. It might be one of the most fun TV shows and nice TV, you know, just sort of like popcorn thing. This is a book which is at that level, talking about the things which you would, if you want a literary book about this kind of thing, like, all of literature is full of books about people not having, having imposter syndrome and having bad relationships and stuff. This is a book about people who want that, plus magic and technology. It's a book for nerds in that way.
Yeah, but it's way too, it's just on the nose all the time.
But that's what the book is. It's in the same way that these other nerd books, like Ready Player One, is a book about somebody who has to know 80s video game trivia to be able to win at life. And you think, well, is that what the book is about? And it's like, that isn't just a subplot of the book. That isn't just an element in the book that, oh, he happens to know, you know, the plot to War Games, or knows the name of this character or sees this. That is the book. There isn't a second layer to that book. It is about someone goes, I feel like I've wasted my life because all I know is trivia about 1980s video games.
And then that becomes handy.
And then it's sort of like, oh, and it just so happens to be that that's the thing that's going to save the world. This is a book about that. This is a book about the same thing. It's like, oh, I have imposter syndrome and I have these thoughts and I have these insecurities. And this is a book about those things will help us save the world. That is what this book is. You know, There isn't another level to it, because that is what the book is. And you've got an issue with this, and I accepted it. Like, I don't think it's a great novel. I don't think it's a great story. I don't think it's great world building. But at the level it was trying to be, which is, this is what the statement of the book is. It's about insecure people realize, like, finding their place in the world and finding relationships and working way through the relationships. Like you say, it's written by the editor of a science fiction blog. You know, that is the level it's going for. And at that level, it's perfectly fine and it succeeds. If you want a deeper book about people finding themselves in relationships, this isn't it. It's like saying, oh, this romance book, oh, it's mostly about two people having, you know, and on chapter 7 they have, you know, they kiss, and then on chapter 9 they, you know, they have sex, and then it goes on, and then the other person's partner comes back, and then they've got to split up. It's like, yeah, what are you expecting from a book, like, from a romance book? That is what the book is going to be. You can't just say, oh, in the end it was just about two people who fall in love and then have, like, this really, you know, vanilla sex, and then has a beard and she has a gown.
What are books for? Why am I reading this? What am I reading this for? To get an insight into broken people and broken world, broken families?
But this is a book for people who want that and find that. There is an infinite number of other books, not an infinite, but there's like an uncountable number of other books, which, guess what, are for you. You're reading now the Peter F. Hamilton book, and you're like, oh, this is exactly what I want. It's space adventures, and they're on planets, and there's these things like that.
He does it so much better, splitting the stories, jumping between the stories,
yes,
combining them in the end.
Peter F. Hamilton is just a better writer. There's a reason why. I mean, this is somebody's first published novel.
Second.
No. I think she's written short stories or whatever. Yeah. So I saw there that she's had a Hugo winning for like some short stories or whatever. Like, this, somebody's first published novel of someone who didn't get a book deal because she's a great novelist or a great storyteller or a great writer. She gets the book deal because she's someone with a built-in audience of being the editor of a science fiction fantasy nerd website. I mean, it's not comparable. You know, people who have an audience in one area and then get a book deal or write a story and then get a book published, it's not, you know, it's not fair to hold them up against people who have, like, million-dollar book deals.
I'm not comparing anything.
Well, you are, because you're realizing this book isn't for you. This book is for the people it was written for, and at that level, it's fine. And I find myself appreciating it and enjoying it at that level, to about 3.5 stars. I'm sorry that it's not the great work of literature and personal personality and character study that you want and relationship study you want, but that's not what it is. It's about people who are obsessed with science fiction and fantasy going, can we make it in the world and have relevance in the world? And of course the answer is love. I mean, but the answer is yes, this is, you can make it in the world, you can find happiness and you can have relevance and can help the world. It's a feel-good story for nerds who don't know how to speak to girls. And guys, like, and both ways, or either ways, or
okay.
By
the thing
ways.
Is, I can't get this, that this is a feel-good book for anyone.
Of course it's a feel-good book. It starts off with talking to birds and 2-second time machines and lots of really fun stuff. Of course it's a feel-good book.
Well, I don't know. And that also...
also...
I think it's a very, I mean, of course, it's like, you read science fiction books, and the events always happen in, of course, in the country where the book is written in. Stop laughing. And here again, it's an American book, and of course...
It's San Francisco, it's about technology, it's going to be in Silicon Valley.
No, it's going to be Silicon Valley. It's not only that.
That's what the book is.
The superstorm hits the United States, and then... When the whole world turns chaotic, we must be the better part of chaos. And of course,
it's America.
Chaos in America means chaos in the world.
Yeah, but we already know that South Korea is gone and the Arabian Peninsula is gone. Although there was this one thing when they said, oh, and then this superstorm mixed with a cyclone and did it. And I was like, wait a second, yeah. Cyclones are in the Indian
Superstorm
Ocean.
Superstorm Allegra making landfall in Delaware, erasing half the eastern seaboard with 1,200 miles of Category 3 fury could disturb these two right now.
Yeah, my point is, just cyclones are Indian Ocean. Oh, is it Pacific Ocean? Hurricanes are Atlantic Ocean. Yeah. And, oh no, typhoons. So you get typhoons, cyclones, and and hurricanes, they're all in different oceans. So when it said this storm mixed with a cyclone, I was like, wait, so a storm came over from the Indian Ocean into the Atlantic Ocean? Like, I was like, how does that... Anyway, it's just a terminology thing.
Exactly. Got to me too.
Yes.
Then the thing is, again, then there was this clever artificial intelligence that they both built up in their childhood,
yes,
which then
we
helped out in their
That's not a plot problem. It was that's what the book was about.
Of course, it came back later.
Of course, because that is what the book is. That is what it was. That is, like, that was going to be the solution to both their relationship and the world.
Yes.
That's not an accident. That it that
of
it was the same.
Of course, it's not an accident. The thing is, I knew it from the very
beginning. But that is literally Chekhov's gun. That they put the gun on the wall in Act One, and it's got to be fired before the end of it. That is what story writing is. Of course, it's obvious. Of course, they're going to have sex at some point in the book. Of course, they're going to help save the day after setting that thing. You know, that is what the book is. It's like complaining that King Arthur. You're like, well, of course. Oh, he just pulled the sword from the stone and then, it's like, yes, that is what the, you can't complain about that is what the story is, because that is the story. Like,
to me, this book feels like what Ready Player One feels like to you.
Okay, sure.
This is this book for me.
Okay, I totally understand why you're coming at that level, but for me, this was just way more enjoyable because it was just more fun.
And then again, another thing that I apparently...
We've got to stop at some point. We've been going over an hour.
There's one more thing. So he's... Lawrence is into science and science fiction.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Then somebody needs to say, sounds like you need more safety protocols and maybe don't randomly test your equipment on human subjects without talking to Milton or myself first.
Yes, it's an idiot plot. It's someone was stupid to move the plot forward. Yes, it happens. It happens in all bad science fiction, and it also happens in this.
Yes.
Which is just bad, idiot plots. I don't want that,
No, I don't want that either, and especially not in a book like this, where you think, oh, this is about a person who is clever. Even if he is not clever in a personal level.
Like
he's
social level.
Social level. And then even in his field of... Well, perfect.
Yeah, it
profession.
Is. But it is
even
one of those.
There is fucking up.
Yeah, it is one of those things where you go, guys, Prometheus, don't just take the helmets off when you land on the planet because there could be stuff.
Never take the helmet off. Yeah. Never.
But you have to see their faces.
In all kind of horror action science fiction movies, kids always do what your parents tell you. It's always down to the kids running off, doing their own things.
Yeah, we know that. Okay.
All right.
Have you said everything you want to... Anyway, you're giving this book one star. You finished it, though.
Yes, I finished it. And it might not be a one-star book. It might be a two or even three-star book.
But you wanted to give it one star because it annoyed you so much.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, maybe I give it two stars.
No, let's do it.
I don't know.
It's really difficult for me to say because
in my...
No, let's do it this way. I gave it 3.5 stars. You give it 1.5 stars. We'll average it out to 2.5 stars. Is that okay?
Yeah, but this is weird because this is only down to me being like...
But you did this
if you
before.
Read all these reviews on Goodreads and stuff, you always see like 4 stars, 5 stars, 3 stars, blah, blah, blah.
Well, let's give it 2.5 stars. It's a totally average... It's an average book I accepted for what it was and enjoyed it at that level. And you couldn't accept it for what it was. And then it annoyed you at the level that you wanted it, you wished it would be.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Let's just leave the review there.
My intellectual understanding of the book is like yours. I totally get what this book is.
But also, where I understood what it is, accepted it, and enjoyed it at that level.
But
the thing is, like, there's other books which I have accepted are at that level and enjoyed them at that level. For example, when I was talking about the We Are Legion, We Are Bob, as soon as I understand, it's a Star Trek fan fiction about a self-replicating mind who sends himself to all these different galaxies and has science fiction adventures, I was like, oh, great, science fiction adventures.
But with Ready Player One, you couldn't do that either.
Well, no, because it was
just
badly written.
This is the kind of book that this is kind of like this.
Yeah, it's like I say, it's at that same level. However, I enjoyed this one more because it was funnier.
And I kind of enjoyed Ready Player One even more than that.
than this book. Yeah. Well, I never read all of it. I kind of skipped forward big chunks of it.
Anyway, I'm really sorry. I don't want... This is the weird thing. If I read a book and I'm not really happy with it, I'm always feeling bad because it's an effort of a person writing this book. And I always know that... Even
you don't have to feel bad. I paid them money. That's the way it works. I've given them money. They have money from me.
I understand this, but I always feel bad because it is an achievement of a person, and I just never enjoy like saying bad things about a person achieving something. Like writing a book, this is amazing. If you can write a book, this is cool.
But
I can't.
But that director made La La Land. You know what? He doesn't care that we walked out halfway through
the movie. I was thinking, can I get my money back? But it's not the cinema's fault. So
yeah, he only cares that we paid €9 each or whatever it was to get into the cinema
last night. Don't remind me about this.
What I love about jazz is that it's exciting. Was that your head hitting the table?
Hitting the table. Yeah.
You know what
I
like?
I don't want to be lectured about jazz by a person who is obviously not a jazz person.
But jazz is exciting. Jazz is dangerous and exciting. Listen to me when I say jazz is exciting. Then nod, and then we turn and we see the end of the jazz thing and we all clap like
Yay.
This. You know what jazz is? Jazz is exciting.
Stop it.
Okay.
Anyway, we were quite disappointed with that one. So, but that doesn't fit at all in this podcast.
We're not going to do a La La Land review of a movie that we walked out halfway through.
Yeah. Anyway, so...
Apparently John Legend turns up in the second half. Like, a real musician turns up.
After an hour. Why is... Like, I mean...
We never saw him.
No,
he was never in the movie.
No, he wasn't...
John Legend wasn't in a movie which is about music and jazz and musicians.
And the thing
John
is,
Legend turned up
is
we after
watched,
we walked out.
The thing is, we watched the trailer afterwards. And we enjoyed the trailer. And I think that the whole movie should be more like the trailer.
I've never...
More like a little bit tighter, a little bit more like acting.
Everything about that trailer was
singing.
Amazing. The trailer, it looked fantastic. The color looked great. The energy was there. The music
was
good.
Energy,
people were laughing and grinning and jumping into swimming pools. That scene with people jumping into swimming pools was excruciating. In the movie, it was excruciatingly, painfully boring.
Yes.
And in the trailer, it's like you see it for literally 20 frames.
Yes,
like
that's all it needs.
Half a second of somebody jumping in a pool going woo, and at a party you're like, hey, that sounds really good.
Fun party.
But guess what? That party wasn't fun for anyone, including the audience. It was a 5-minute party about somebody not enjoying themselves at a party in a way which wasn't enjoyable.
Also full with...
We can't talk about this movie because we're already too long.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
2.5 stars. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. Juliana's on Twitter as well. JUKU Berlin. Yuku Berlin. It's like part of her name.
But this was the first rant I actually...
This is it. That was a good rant. I'm very pleased that you're getting in some good rants. And I didn't rant about this book.
Yeah.
Like I say, issues. Only a 3.5 star book. Not the best book I've read. But not terrible. I mean, not bad. It was what it was, and it was there, you know. Anyway, be our friends on Goodreads. I will be posting my review of this, and also there's the and you can comment there. Also comment on Juliana's review, because now you know what she thinks. And also you can go across to the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com, and that's a great way to get us to read a book that you want us to read. I think this book was actually mentioned in that thread as well, All the Birds and Sky. Anyway,
yeah,
but also there's one called Episode Feedback. So if you just want to give us general feedback about this episode or others, I'll start a thread about this book if you feel strongly about it, and other people will join in and give their comments as well. If you're wondering, hey, has Luke read this book? Don't only go by the books that are in the feed on iTunes or on the whatever feed that whatever podcast app you're using. Because only the last, I think, 100 books are there, and we're up to episode 324 now. So get yourself over to sfbrp.com, click on the episode lists, and you'll be able to find it there. And also Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/sfbrp if you want to help support this. I'm not going to do a full ad because this wasn't an audiobook. That's it. Anything else?
Yeah, you support me listening to Otherland.
Yes. Yeah. We can spend different credits and different things in different places. Right. That's it. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.